Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and returning to explain, to grace us with his horror film knowledge is writer, producer, director Ricardo Islas, who was here for the last matinee a couple years ago, and he's got a new movie that is out on streaming on demand called Night Hunt. It is set in Chicago, and it's about two precociously feisty, independent podcast / reporter, news reporters who find themselves chasing a vampire who has newly landed in Chicago and is causing a lot of trouble. Hi, Ricardo.
Hi, how are you?
Very, very well. This movie, Night Hunt, is a recent production. I believe it came out in December.
Yes, we launched in December. We shot last year.
So tell us about making Night Hunt, because this is definitely a throwback to the 70s, 80s type of horror. The music is definitely reminding me of the 80s. And just making this had to have been a lot of fun.
Making it was a lot of fun. It was a tough one, though, for several reasons. The first one is that we were ready to go almost 6 months before we actually shot it, when COVID attacked and it shut us down, and particularly me, but also some other folks. But I sent me to the hospital for 10 days, so we had to cancel the shoot. And I'm talking about not canceling like a day before. The actual day we were going to start shooting, it was a Friday night, I went to the hospital for 10 days. So we had to put everything in the freeze. And then some of the actors had to be recast because they were not available. Many of the locations had to be rebooked. And all the things that normally are difficult when you're producing a movie became more difficult because of this delay. But on the other hand, we had some new members to the team. We had more time to think about it, a lot of time to think about it during recovery. And I think we ended up with a better movie. Now, the actual shoot was as difficult as any independent low-budget movie is, but also because of the way we work here in Chicago with our productions. It was like a family. So we would shoot only on weekends because everybody else, mostly everybody else, had other jobs. So we took about, I would say, two months and a half shooting on weekends to shoot the movie. The whole thing was shot in 14 days, non-consecutive 14 days. And because with some of them, I've been working for 20 years. It was really like going back to the times. You mentioned the 70s. I would take you even a little further back to the 60s and the productions that the British company Hammer were making. It was everybody knew each other. They would just, you know, do carpooling early in the morning. So do we, and go to locations and spend the day there, eat together, have fun, and then come back home with your families. That's pretty much how we did it.
So you wrote and directed this, produced it, obviously, and also play a part in the film. How long did it take for you to actually write this film, and what sort of tone were you going for?
I wrote it very fast. I normally write fast, but this one I wrote faster than usual. I would say I wrote it in under a month. And that's because it's such a dear genre for me. I mean, horror is very, as you know, it's very broad, and there are many, many subgenres within horror. You have vampires as a subgenre, but also this kind of vampire movie where the vampire is a monster, and then the other characters, somehow some of them play like a sitcom almost. That combination of humor and horror lends itself for fast writing because everything is fast. The pace is fast. The dialogues are fast. We're talking about, and I'm sure you saw the parallels, the 70s, the movies that Dan Karras produced for American TV in the 70s. I'm talking about Kolchak, The Night Stalker. I'm talking about The Curse of the Black Widow. All those movies that he produced in the 70s were pretty much following this formula where you have the good guys, the main characters, being fun, almost comedic, you know, like I said, playing like a sitcom. But then when you go to horror, the monsters are not funny. The monsters are serious. The monsters are monsters, and they do what monsters do, kill people and cause damage. And that combination is what I was going for. I hope it's what I achieved. I think I did. And that's why I wrote so fast, because it's something that is in my mind and it's been with me since I was a child.
Yeah, to me, it seemed like the comedy level, the tone of the comedy was more snarky, wise-ass than slapstick. And that plays to the strengths of your two main characters, Pilar and was it Shelley?
Shelley.
Yeah, and they have a just an adorable relationship. The banter was amusing to me, especially when you know they know that they're going into danger, but the wise ass cracks don't stop.
Yeah, you're right. See, going back to the parallels with Don Curtis movies, in his movies usually the hero is a man. And it's alone. So those heroes in the 70s were also, you know, like wise and, you know, always with sarcasm and, you know, what do you say, crack ass? Is that the term you used?
Wise ass.
Oh, wise ass. Okay, something with an ass it was, I know. So that's how those, but then when they went into danger, they were always alone. You know, it was the 70s, so male, you know, male driven, everything, you know. But in this case, I love these two girls. I love Pilar and Shelley. And I knew that when they went into danger, I wanted things to get serious, but you couldn't get them out of character. So it was a difficult balance to achieve, to show them scared and yet never finish their back and forth and the wise ass thing. But I think that the actresses, Monica and Adilene, I think they really pulled it off. We did a lot of work before shooting, which is something normally you don't do in independent movies, but we did take a long time for rehearsals. We did a lot of character development work with Mary Q. Angel, who was my assistant director. She's very good working with actors, much better than I am or ever will be. So we did a lot of sessions with the girls, and they really pulled it off.
Talk about the choices for the sets. There were the hideout where the first intended victim, her brother, took her there to sort of lay low and get away from our vampire. And there were several other like warehouse scenes and the hospital scene. I think it was the hospital where they were some unfortunate victims of our main vampire, who we learn his name is Crowley. How did the shutdown affect which locations you were using?
Well, you're talking about the lockdowns during COVID. How did it affect the locations? Or
yeah, were any of those sets that we see in the final movie, were those replacements for sets you lost during for shooting?
Yeah, for sure. That's locations is probably one of the areas that whole delay of 6 months because of COVID affected the most. In some cases, for good. For example, the hospital, when we were going to shoot the first time around, it was very difficult to get, and we were almost there, almost to the date of the start shooting, and we couldn't really resolve it. Then the hospital that you see in the movie is actually a studio, and an addition to a new addition after those 6 months of wait to the team was Bouncing Bunny Productions, which is a company that partnered with me with Alpha Studios to make this movie. And this was a studio they had. So we actually conditioned some of the areas in the building that they use for like the kitchen of the building and areas that were not really normally used to shoot. We conditioned that area to make it look like a hospital, renting some props and stuff and just dressing it up. Then the hideout that you mentioned, which is one of my favorite locations where the brother takes the sister for the attack of the vampire, that's actually a building that is not in use. I mean, it's almost abandoned. In the front of the building, there is a church. And then in the back is this place that you see there where the sister is hiding and else. It's an apartment inside the building that is abandoned. And it has no heat, so it was under 12 degrees that night. And we had to shoot in there without a heat. That helped the movie because you can see the smoke coming out of the mouth of the characters here and there. But it was tough. And then the final location where the vampire is sleeping, which is really, really a big, pretty spectacular location. That all of these are the results, even the first hideout that we were talking about, the results of partnering with local filmmakers and producers, and we help each other. For example, Simeon Henderson is the actor who plays the brother, TJ. He made a movie that we just launched last week to the platforms, a crime drama called Roman. I shot and edited that movie for he, in exchange for him to help me produce Night Hunt. So he's an actor and producer in Night Hunt, and that building where that location they had out is his family's. So we went inside that building and shot the scene there. And then there's another producer, Chris Adams, who does horror and sci-fi sometimes here in the city as well. We're about to work on another production with him. And he is the one who owns that big space, which is used as a studio for other movies as well, where we shot the final scene. So everything here, and like I said, I've been doing this here in Chicago for over 20 years. Everything here is like people helping each other. We have an industry in Chicago, but it's working with TV series for NBC. You know, and that's their own thing. And for us independent, we don't even have a piece of that action. But for us independent and low budget independents, this is how we make it work. We help each other in different areas, and then we just get locations, actors, etc.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, everybody just helping each other out.
That's how we do it.
So talk a little bit about the effects of the vampire, of the vampire's victims. I know from last time you're a big fan of the practical effects. What was the effect this time using practical effects? How did your actors respond? Because some people, even if it's fake blood, are just, oh my God, this is sticky.
It is, you bet. It was an interesting thing in this movie because even when it's not your vampire that turns into a werewolf, that turns into a bad type of movie, it's a very human vampire. The devastation that he causes with the killings did call for a lot of special effects, the kind that I like, which is physical, on-set, practical special effects. Again, because of the delay, of the 6-month delay that we had between the original shooting schedule and the actual shooting schedule, a new team member that we added to the team was Hilario Rodriguez. I didn't know him before. I had never worked with him before. He is your typical guy who can do it all, you know, from props to create breakaway props to like the door that in one scene you see a guy flying through a door inside the hideout. That door he created that night on set. He just measured that night and made the actual door that night on set. To all the, you know, all the prosthetics. And we have also Valerie Vandercock, who has worked with me before in another couple of movies. She did the fine details, the makeup prosthetics details, and Hilario did the bigger stuff, like the going through glasses, going through a window at the end, you know, props breakaway and everything else. Now, which is interesting is that the first time around when we were going to shoot the movie in the 6 months before, I didn't have Hilario. So I was going to use more digital effects, and I wasn't crazy about doing that. But I didn't know anyone who could do practical effects for me. And I even contacted someone from Uruguay who worked with me before and who I knew when I was there to help me with the digital stuff. And I was going to shoot all that hideout scene and all the guys flying around and people dying and all of that with green screen and all of that. And I wasn't crazy about that. And when I talked to my friend in Uruguay, even when he's good at all of this, he said to me, try to do as much as you can with practical effects. That was a conversation. 6 months later, I met Hilario and we went for it. So two areas that I had to have in mind to make it work, stunts. And I worked with Gabriel Marroquin with his stunt company many times before. I contacted Gabriel and of course Hilario came to him on board. So having now someone that was going to build props for me and stunts that were going to just fly around, we did it all physical. We didn't even touch, except for erasing some wires here and there. We didn't digitally touch anything and we went for it.
Now, were most of your actors doing their own stunts or did you actually have a stunt team?
No, we had stunts. In the final fight between Pilar Shelley and the vampire, there were some things that even when the actresses were willing to do, I was concerned about their safety. There's a scene when when Shelley is punched all over and she rolls over an old car from the 70s and falls on the other side. Of course, the scene when I push Pilar through the glass, her face forward to the glass, all of those more dangerous stuff, they were done by stunts. And of course, the hideout scene that has guys flying over some stairs and all of those were the actors are the stunts in that case, because when I was working with Gabriel, he has a team of stunts. And I said, why don't we, most of your guys are also actors. Why don't we just create, and I even wrote the scene or rewrote the scene to cater to particular people that we had. And we made it work that way. So it's a combination of actors, stunts, and stunts for actors.
The other thing I enjoyed about this movie was even though it felt very 70s in feel and in the way it's shot, there's a lot of modern references. I think it's Pilar is the one who wants to be an influencer on social media. So that's why she's doing this internet radio, this streaming local radio show. And the shout outs to podcasting, to radio, to investigative reporters. I thought that was hilarious because like you said, and I'm not going to spoil it, but the wrap up, the conclusion for Chicagoans was a story that was believable. And that happened a lot to Kolchak. You know, his investigations ended up being spun in such a way that it was a believable scenario rather than a supernatural one. And I have to applaud that that little nod to the old school.
Let me tell you how far the nod went. When you see, I think about probably a couple of times in the movie, when you see the train passing by in front of the window of the radio station where Pilar and Shelley have their podcast, that is the original window and the original building that was used in the 70s for Kolchak, the Night Stalker, the series. That
wow.
is, I mean, yeah, if you go, you know, Kolchak inspired entire generations. I mean, Chris Carter and the whole X-Files was inspired by Kolchak. And you know, I'm in my 50s. I grew up with Kolchak. It was my show. It was the show that I was waiting every night. In my country, of course, I saw it in Spanish. Kolchak, El Cazador Nocturno, that's the title. And I saw it, and I didn't know Chicago, and I could have never guessed in my life I would end up living in Chicago. And this is what's crazy and funny, and things happen for a reason, I guess, although I'm not to believe fairy tales or anything, but this is crazy. My office, my day job, my office, I produce media, is downtown Chicago. And the train station where I take the train every day, or before the pandemic every day, now 2 days a week, is the station where that shot, the famous shot of the window, was done in the 70s. And I didn't know. until I found online a group that is Chicago Culture, the Nice Talker on Facebook, a group, and they had the picture of this window that I see every day. And I said, wait a minute. And then I went to the Sears and said, yes, it is the Sears. It's the old Colony building. And I contacted the people from the Colony building. I contacted the lady, very nice lady, who said, yeah, sure. Right now that place is used as a dorm for students of Columbia College. Said in the spring, which is when we ended up shooting, in the spring, we have those rooms empty. So I actually had access to the room, and I could the sign that says The Hammer, which is the name of the podcast, we put in the actual window where Culture was shot half a century ago. So that match, this is a nod to Culture, the Nice Talker. I felt I was walking on clouds shooting those scenes around that building, you know, really walking in clouds. It's like going to Transylvania to the actual castle of Dracula and shoot Dracula there, you know. I don't know how I came to this point, and I don't know what your original question was. I'm sorry, but just the whole Culture thing. Oh, then yeah, then not to the 70s, and yet the podcast in there and the whole thing about investigative reporting. Yeah, it feels real because in many cases it is real, you know. And there are many parallelisms between the 70s and the days that we live today in many things, you know. They're, unfortunately, not all of them are good. But I think the series, the Kolchak series, and the two movies that were produced in the 70s, and now in the present, Night Hunt, to some extent, reflect what's going on. And I went for that on purpose, and I think to some extent we achieved it.
And I just have to confirm, naming their podcast, their broadcast, The Hammer, that's a nod to Hammer Films?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I even tried to find for the logo when I was designing the logo that is on the or their card, on the windows, on the studio. I tried to find the fonts that are as close as possible to some of the fonts that the Hammer used in some of their movies. No, yes, absolutely. That's my love for all of that. Yeah, reflected.
Now, I don't want to spoil anything, but the ending was, are you guys planning a sequel?
Well, one thing that maybe you probably don't know this because it was done in another galaxy in another time, but back in the 80s, to be more precise, 1986 and then 1989, I made two movies with Crowley, and I was Crowley in those movies. So those are the first movies I made. I mean, especially the first Crowley was my first feature length. I had made a short before. And then the second Crowley was the third movie I made in my life. So 30 something years later, I was trying to, I had plans to go back to Uruguay after the last matinee and do something else. And then the pandemic came down and shut everything off. The whole world closed down. And I said, what am I going to do? I can't just, I spend like everybody else 1 year and a half, 2 years without doing anything. And I was just walking and, you know, around the house, like, you know, like crazy. So I said, let me write a movie about a vampire or something. I wasn't planning on doing a movie about Crowley, the vampire of 30 years ago. And I had in mind a story about two girls facing a vampire in a city. That was vaguely the story that I had in mind. And then all of a sudden, it came to my mind, wait a minute, I just played the Asesino Come Ojos for the last matinee. It did very well. It's still on Showtime. It's still everywhere. And that's my face. That's my damn face. You know, it's me there, you know, playing a monster. So why don't I use myself? And when I said, why don't I use myself, that took me to Crowley. So this is actually a third sequel with a very long gap in between of a trilogy of movies. And to answer your question, I really don't know if there will be another part in the future. Maybe yes, maybe not. I mean, I need to hurry. I mean, otherwise I'm going to be Crowley on a walker, you know, chasing people. But, you know, it might be. Yeah. I mean, Pilar and Shelley, I'm sure they're going to bring them back. Maybe facing another monster. That I'm pretty sure. I even wrote an entire series for Pilar and Shelley before I wrote this movie. But for Crowley, I don't know. Time will say.
Well, either way, I would like to see more of this style, because it's fun. It's a throwback to when horror movies were less serious and more about the horror the monster rather than how much of a mess you can make. And this was a lot of fun.
I'm glad you liked it. And that's what you just described is the spirit. I wrote another two movies in the same fashion that I'm hoping to start producing in 2024. One in Spanish, one in English. So we'll see. But definitely the style is that. It's when you have these good guys who are sarcastic and funny, but which is very important to me, and I think it was important for those productions in the 70s, we are not including the monster in the fun. The monster is just a monster. It's serious, and that's how you can have those ups and downs in the graphic of the movie. When you start including the monster in the funny parts, you lose that. You know, in the 80s, we start seeing those movies, you know, like and some of them are classics like Evil Dead, or you know, but you end up, it's a comedy. At the end of the day, it turns into a comedy, and the horror maybe is just disgusting at times, but not really scary. But I want to go back to the 70s with the combination that you described perfectly.
Cool. So is there anything you currently have in production, or are you just working on getting those other two films started next year?
I'm working on those two films. I might this summer, we have to line up some stuff, but this summer, Chris Adams, producer that I mentioned before, a couple of years ago, maybe further than a couple of years ago, he produced an anthology movie called Paradigm. Paradigm is in the title, and I think there's another movie. It's also on Tubi. If I find it, I can send it to you later. So it's a compilation of short stories with a thread, okay? And he's going to shoot another one. And he contacted me a few months ago, and he told, I was still producing Crowley, and he asked me if I had anything short. And I said, damn, I would love to be a part of this, but I've never written shorts except for very, very early in my career. I'm talking the 80s now. I've never written shorts. I've always been making features. So I challenged myself to write a short, and I liked it very much. And that might be maybe probably my next production this summer. To produce one of the shorts of the anthology that he's going to make. But then for next year, yes, I have these other two movies that are in the same style as Night Hunt.
Awesome. Well, Ricardo, I want to thank you for your time today and sharing your love of old school horror with us.
Thank you. And it's always a pleasure for me to be able to talk about something that not everybody gets. <You know? laughs>
Yeah. So are you on social media, or have a couple of websites where people can find you? Tell us what those are.
Yeah, I have my name, Ricardo Islas, on Facebook. I also have the same name. I have Instagram. And I also have a YouTube channel, which is called New Alpha Studios, where I'm always updating videos backstage and things like that.
Awesome. We'll include links to that. Again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It was nice talking to you again.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Pseudopod, the free horror fiction podcast, brought to you by Escape Artists.
It makes my bones chatter against each other, and you sit up in bed. I scream as I remain a statue, and then the fury in me becomes a raging, hot thing in my chest.
Each week, one story told well.
There, writhing in lurid agony upon the floor, was a short creature, perhaps 2 feet tall. It was covered with red, wire-like hair on every inch of its exposed flesh.
From the most chilling and unsettling storytellers of the genre.
The wind's up now, and the sackcloth is blowing in black tatters round it, making it writhe like the worms, only that ain't all sackcloth.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or find us on the web at pseudopod.org, and on Patreon under EA Podcasts.
Hi, this is Barbara Crampton, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi. Ooh, scary.
Once again, the movie is Night Hunt, and it is available on Tubi, as well as, I think, Amazon Prime. So check that out if you are on either platform. I think Tubi... Yeah, I don't think you have to sign up to watch Tubi, because I've been watching Babylon 5 on Tubi, and that's how I saw this one. Go check it out. It is a fun one if you're a fan of the old 70s style throwbacks, like Kolchak the Night Stalker. In fact, some of the research I was doing afterwards led me to realize that Kino Lorber put out a complete Kolchak the Night Stalker Blu-ray that has commentaries for each episode. So, of course, I had to go find a copy of that. Hopefully, it'll be here next week, and I can dive into that. I don't know what it is about the commentary tracks. I love them. I love the detail that some of them go into, and I can't wait to see what they've put together for this. It's not an anniversary collection. I think it's like an archival type of collection. So I'll let you know what I find. But how about you? Have you seen Night Hunt? Are you planning to see Night Hunt? Are you a fan of this type of horror film? The Hammer films, the Kolchaks, the maybe a little bit of Corman too. Anyway, call in, let me know. The number is 602-635-6976, or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can also chime in, leave a message on the website at sliceofscifi.com. Leave a note or a comment or a question in the discussion section for this episode, or hit me up on Twitter at sliceofscifi. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please feel free to leave us a rating or a review. Let folks know that you are enjoying the show here. The content, the interviews, the questions we have about movies, both good and bad. And maybe they should check it out for themselves. I'd like to thank everyone who's currently helping to support our efforts here at all the different podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, some of which are being revamped, so pardon the digital dust. But if you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi or paypal.me/scifisummer. If you are a supporter, especially through Patreon, you can be eligible for perks. Every month I pick a winner out of the proverbial hat, and that person gets to choose from a book, a DVD, a Blu-ray, a 4K, some of the review materials I have around here. I just don't have the space to keep it all. So you, all of you, fans, friends, and listeners, supporters of the show, get first tips at some of the really cool stuff I get to review. So, like I said, pick a tier, any tier, and you are eligible for those perks. And if you're a winner, I'll let you know. Another way you can support is through affiliate link purchases over at sliceofscifi.net. I am currently expanding the catalog over there, so fear not if it looks a little sparse right now. I have a whole stack of books and DVDs, well, movies, TV shows to add. So stay tuned for that. And once again, thank you for all of your support. Your efforts help keep our efforts going and the websites up and running and the podcasts being produced. So again, thank you. Thank you all for your help and support. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next time. Take care.